You're listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Good morning, all. I'm Jessica Matthews, president of the Carnegie Endowment, and it's a pleasure to welcome you this morning. We're privileged to have with us today the assistant to the president for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, John Brennan. As we reflect on the end of 2010 and look towards 2011, it's difficult to overstate the effect that weak states have had on global politics and security and are having. And near the very top of the list of those countries of concern is Yemen. And we are therefore particularly keen to hear Mr. Brennan's insights today. You have in front of you a brief biography. I just want to emphasize that his has been an impressive three-decade-long career in the intelligence arena. At the CIA, he served from 1980 to 2005 in numerous high-level positions. His accomplishments include establishing the National Counterterrorism Center and directing the Terrorist Threat Integration Center. And he served as a principal senior aide to CIA Director George Tenet and as the principal intelligence briefer to President Clinton. For the last 2 years, John Brennan has served as the top counterterrorism official in the White House. The New York Times said of him, "If it," meaning the war, the counterterrorism war, "is now Obama's war, Brennan is his general." So, General Brennan, we're very happy to have you today. The threat that Mr. Brennan will address today, Yemen, has been on the world's radar screen ever since the tragic USS Cole bombing 10 years ago. It returned to the front pages after the Yemeni-trained Christmas Day bomber last year, and again in recent months when al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula attempted to send explosives onto two Chicago synagogues. AQAP is now a greater threat to American domestic security in all likelihood than the more well-known central al-Qaeda organization in South Asia. At Carnegie, Christopher Buttigieg has shed new light on the unprecedented problems that are facing Yemen today. In addition to a resurgent al-Qaeda, the government has to contend with a civil war in the north, an increasingly active secessionist movement in the south, a deepening economic crisis, a dwindling water supply, which is linked directly to much of the violence in the country, addiction to a widespread narcotic, even more widespread corruption, and a weak central government. As Chris has noted in his work, Yemen is a country close to the brink of failure, and if it were to fail, the ripples from that would certainly spread rather widely in the region. So given this bleak picture, the questions that we're eager to hear answers to today are what the U.S. can do to help stabilize Yemen, how is U.S. counterterrorism policy adapting to this growing threat, and how can the United States work with other nations to ensure Yemen's and the region's security? I think there probably is no better person to address all of these questions than our speaker here today. And so we, I hope you will join me in welcoming him, John Brennan. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jessica, for that kind introduction, as well as for your leadership, not only here at Carnegie, but for your years of public service and for your many writings, which have helped both policymakers and the American people better understand and address the challenges facing our nation. And I'd like to thank everyone here at Carnegie as well for being here today and for sustaining this institution as a force for global peace and security for 100 years. And congratulations on your centennial.
Thank you.
The mission statement on your website says that Carnegie is dedicated to advancing cooperation between nations and promoting active international engagement by the United States. These two words, cooperation and engagement, capture well the essence of what I want to talk about today. And that is why the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace is such a fitting venue for my remarks. And let me say that it's wonderful to see so many people here, diplomats, civil society leaders, public servants, academics, who have dedicated their professional lives to the study of Yemen. And I especially want to acknowledge former U.S. Ambassadors David Newton and Stephen Sesh for being here today and for your service in support of our nation's policy objectives in that part of the world. I very much appreciate this opportunity to discuss a country and a people that I've come to know and admire for over 30 years. When I first joined the government in 1980, one of my first assignments was as an analyst on Yemen. And when I was posted to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia in the early 1980s, I traveled several times to the Saudi-Yemeni border, camped among and with the tribes in the region, and saw firsthand the beauty of the land that was known in ancient times as Arabia Felix, or Happy Arabia, because of the rich, verdant landscape, the plentiful spices, and the enterprising and beautiful people found there. I have had the great pleasure to return to Yemen four times since joining the administration 23 months ago. With each visit, I find something new and fascinating about the country, the dramatic topography, the beautiful architecture, the handcrafted silver, and the back streets of Sana'a that appear unaffected by passing centuries. And in each of those last four visits, I have had the opportunity to meet with President Ali Abdullah Saleh and senior Yemeni officials. In each of our meetings, we have had direct and serious discussion about the partnership between Yemen and the United States. And I came away from each of these visits to Yemen with better insight on the interests, concerns, and aspirations of not only President Saleh, but also of the Yemeni people. And more about that in a few minutes. In short, I have had the great pleasure of coming to see Yemen, not merely how many Westerners, including Americans, sometimes perceive it, but for what it truly is. A rich culture, a beautiful country, and a proud and resilient people. I have also come to understand something that all of you know. Yemen matters. Yemen matters to the world not simply because of the threats emanating from within its borders today, as we saw again during this week's attack on our embassy personnel in Sana'a, which we strongly condemn. Yemen matters because of its enduring strategic significance. With its strategic location at the junction of two of the world's most important waterways, the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, Yemen has served as a commercial and transportation hub for centuries, connecting Mediterranean, African, and Arab ports. This location, of course, has made Yemen the target of foreign interventions that have left an indelible mark on the country. Yet its location has also allowed Yemen to enjoy periods of wealth and prosperity, cultural development, and burgeoning industry. During medieval times, Yemen became a commercial center for spices and textiles. And as recently as this month, in the midst of so much challenge, Yemen hosted the Gulf Cup soccer tournament for the first time ever, with thousands of soccer fans flocking to Aden. And that successful and peaceful international event was a tribute to Yemeni determination to hold the tournament despite the challenges as well as the threats. Likewise, it is impossible to understand Yemen's current situation without an historical context. Those of you in this room need no lesson in Yemen's complex history from me, but I do want to spend a few minutes on the past because it informs how President Obama and those of us within the administration see Yemen today. Traditionally, Yemen has not been united into one nation, but rather divided by various tribal and external actors. In the 19th century, Yemen had become part of the expanding Ottoman and British empires, which resulted in the north coming under the control of the Ottomans and the south becoming part of the British sphere of influence. Eventually, the Ottomans and the British lost control and the south fell under the influence of the communists, supported by the Soviet Union. And it was not until 1990, under President Ali Abdullah Saleh, that Yemen was united. This is the history that feeds into the current tensions between the Yemeni government and domestic opponents. Some Yemenis in the southern part of the country cite an inequitable distribution of resources and political power as the reasons behind increased tensions with the Yemeni government. The government of Yemen has engaged on these issues with political activists in the south, including those calling for secession. This engagement can help maintain stability and foster a political environment and institutions that address these longstanding grievances. This dialogue between the government and the Southerners must continue. The Houthis in the northern part of the country present another challenge, one that at times has resulted in open military conflict with both the Yemeni and the Saudi governments. Based in the Saudi governorate, the Houthi oppositionists are followers of the Houthi family who claim elite status among the Shia Zaydi Muslims as Sayyids, descendants of the Prophet Muhammad. The Houthis cite similar concerns as oppositionists in the south and seek reconstruction of wartime damages, economic assistance, and stable access to essential services, as well as the lifting of religious and educational restrictions. The Houthis have developed a robust and cohesive military arsenal, and Yemeni and Houthi forces clashed again last year, their sixth round of fighting since 2004. Even more daunting is the scope of Yemen's socioeconomic challenges. It remains one of the poorest countries in the world, with perhaps 40% unemployment and per capita income of under $1,000 a year. Yemen was severely affected by the recent flood crisis, and about a third of Yemenis are considered undernourished, one of the highest rates in the region. Basic services are woefully lacking, with just 40% of the people having access to electricity and much of the rural population living in relative isolation. And the pressures on Yemen will only continue to grow, with more than half of the population under the age of 20, and with its population of about 23 million projected to double well before the year 2040. In addition, Yemen is one of the most water-scarce countries in the world and is drawing water faster than it can be replenished, creating enormous challenges for public health and agriculture. Many farmers have turned to cultivation of khat, to which so many Yemenis are now unfortunately addicted. Khat cultivation also requires a large amount of water to grow, making for a vicious cycle, with much of the available water being used to grow khat, the development of other crops is stifled even more. Atop all this, Yemen's economy, which is not sufficiently diversified, continues to deteriorate. Much of the economy and the lion's share of the government's revenue and public expenditures is based on oil revenue. But oil revenues are expected to drop due to a variety of factors, including natural field decline and the reluctance of international oil companies to work in Yemen. These companies cite poor political and security environment and opaque business environment as reasons they don't do business in Yemen. Without these companies working alongside them, the Yemenis are losing key investment and technical expertise. And with the decrease in oil revenue, little to fall back on, and a deteriorating fiscal situation, Yemen reached out to the IMF for assistance to help stabilize the situation. So let me say this. Even if there were no threats to our security emanating from Yemen, the circumstances that I have described so far would be more than worthy of American attention. Yemen matters. The people of Yemen matter. And as President Obama has made clear, our common humanity connects us to those Yemenis who are struggling to make ends meet and to live in freedom and dignity. All of these challenges have made not only Yemen ripe for internal instability, they have made the country an attractive recruiting and training ground for Al-Qaeda. Indeed, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is now the most operationally active node of the Al-Qaeda network. So who are these terrorists? Al-Qaeda, of course, has had a presence in Yemen and Saudi Arabia for well over a decade. For its part, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is a hybrid of old guard operatives with close ties to Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda leadership in South Asia, as well as new generation elements of Al-Qaeda who have embraced bin Laden's mandate to attack the United States and the West. It was Al-Qaeda operatives in Yemen who attacked the USS Cole in 2000 and the French oil tanker MV Limburg in 2002. Some of the individuals responsible for the attack on the Cole then escaped a Yemeni prison as part of a larger prison break in 2006 and would go on to form the leadership of the Al-Qaeda Arabian Peninsula franchise. In Saudi Arabia, the Al-Qaeda affiliate there conducted a series of attacks beginning in 2003 that over the next few years killed 13 Americans, including an attack on the U.S. consulate in Jeddah in 2004. The campaign against this group waged by the Saudi government has been largely successful, capturing and killing most of the group's leadership in Saudi Arabia by 2007. However, the remnants of that network fled the kingdom, many of them going to Yemen, where they joined with their Yemeni counterparts to form Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in 2009. More recently, the ranks of al-Qaeda have been bolstered by members with ties to the West or with American citizenship, such as Anwar al-Awlaki. Indeed, al-Qaeda is seeking to attract not just Westerners or Americans overseas, but Americans inside the United States. This increasingly active outreach is in line with al-Qaeda's senior leadership's vision, a global violent effort against the United States and its allies. As a result, al-Qaeda today poses a serious threat to Yemen, to Saudi Arabia, and to the United States. Al-Qaeda has conducted a wave of attacks against Yemeni security forces, attacked our embassy in Sana'a in September 2008, and attempted a small rocket attack against the British ambassador's vehicle in Sana'a earlier this year. It also attempted to set back Saudi counterterrorism successes with a suicide attack against Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Nayef in 2009, which thankfully failed. And of course, al-Qaeda has been responsible for two attempted attacks against the U.S. homeland over the past year, the attempt by Umar Farouk Abdulmuttalib to bring down a Northwest flight on Christmas Day last year, and more recently, attempting to send air cargo packages containing explosives to the United States. The group's leadership clearly seeks to apply lessons learned from past attacks, including those of other groups, and their definition of success, stoking fear, even if their attacks fail, portends more such attempts. This is the challenge the United States, Yemen, and our partners face today from al-Qaeda's cowardly thugs who have put down roots in the Arabian Peninsula. Now, no nation could address this range of challenges alone, and Yemen is no different. It needs partners, it needs assistance, and it needs to know that the international community will not stand idly by and watch Yemen fall victim to al-Qaeda's murderous agenda. And that is why the Obama administration has developed a comprehensive approach to support Yemen in its time of need. In this sense, our Yemen policy reflects the president's clear-eyed understanding of the dual challenges before us in our work to protect the American people and our partners. On one hand, there is the near-term challenge of destroying al-Qaeda and its extremist affiliates. And let me assure everyone in this room, we will destroy al-Qaeda. But there is a larger and long-term challenge of confronting the political, economic, and social forces that can sometimes drive individuals down the path toward militancy. This, in turn, involves offering an alternative that affords people the political space, economic opportunity, and social inclusion that make countries like Yemen less vulnerable to terrorist networks. In other words, we aim to forge partnerships that offer people a future of hope and dignity. In fact, President Obama has been very insistent to those of us on his team that our partnership with Yemen not be defined solely by common threats, but rather by the shared vision of a brighter future that the Yemeni people want and so richly deserve. So in Yemen, like elsewhere, we're pursuing a comprehensive approach that addresses both near and long-term challenges. And we're doing so by harnessing every tool of American power, military and civilian, kinetic and diplomatic, as well as the power of our values. The Obama administration has been working closely with our Yemeni partners to address the drivers of instability in Yemen well before the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula attempted the attack last Christmas. Over the past few years, we have strengthened our bilateral relationship and have dramatically expanded our efforts to help improve Yemen's political situation and socioeconomic outlook. We have increased total U.S. assistance to Yemen from $22 million in 2008 to about $300 million in 2010. The role of our civilian agencies in Yemen is steadily increasing, and our bilateral non-military assistance accounts for nearly half of the assistance provided to Yemen in 2010, with the total reaching approximately $130 million in non-security assistance. Our efforts in Yemen involve a wide range of U.S. government agencies. The Departments of State and Defense and USAID have been working in Yemen for years, and they are now working alongside counterparts from agencies including Commerce, Treasury, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, Justice, and Agriculture. On the economic front, our Treasury and State Departments supported Yemen's negotiations for an IMF program signed this summer, which provided much-needed fiscal relief for the Yemeni government and people. I was pleased to learn about the approval earlier this week of a World Bank grant to support Yemeni private sector growth and social protection. We also look forward to seeing the next version of Yemen's development plan for poverty reduction. In another important step, the United States and Yemen have concluded bilateral market access negotiations as part of Yemen's efforts to accede to the World Trade Organization. Yemen's progress on the path to adopting international standards is an important step toward integration with global markets and improving the economic fortunes of the Yemeni people. To increase the opportunities for the next generation of Yemenis, we continue to expand our educational exchange programs. Department of State-sponsored exchange programs provide world-class educational and training opportunities for over 100 Yemeni students and professionals each year, from high school students to cabinet-level government officials. These are the people who will help determine the future of their nation, and the United States is committed to lending a helping hand to the next generation of Yemeni leaders. Our comprehensive strategy in Yemen puts a premium on reform that increases stability, capacity, accountability, and inclusiveness of the Yemeni government, in both the short as well as the long term. We are working with the Yemenis and our international partners to help build the necessary components of a functioning democratic system. This includes promoting political reconciliation, increased government transparency, improved delivery of essential services, support for freedom of the press, the growth of a vibrant civil society, strengthened rule of law, and free and open elections. It is no secret that Yemen faces profound challenges in many of these areas, and none of them can be ignored. Yet it is also undeniable that governance and rule of law are the bedrock of development, and development is the foundation for stability. Just last week, my staff had the opportunity to meet with two very dedicated representatives from Yemen's anti-corruption body to discuss opportunities for training on financial investigations and rule of law. We continue to stress the importance of the national dialogue, which is the mechanism used in Yemen to reach political consensus on a range of problems, including election modalities, the Houthi conflict, and southern unrest. At the same time, we are working closely with our international partners to leverage the expertise, resources, and assistance that nations in the region and around the world can offer Yemen. For example, the Friends of Yemen Forum, including Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, the United States, and the United Kingdom, is providing valuable assistance as Yemen pursues political, economic, and social reforms. A working group chaired by the UAE and Germany is helping on the economic development and governance front. Another working group chaired by the Netherlands and Jordan focuses on improving justice, security, and the rule of law. We are looking forward to participating in the Friends of Yemen Ministerial in Saudi Arabia next year, and we will continue to work with the government and people of Yemen and our international partners on coordinating and streamlining donor assistance going forward. This is a long-term challenge, and while the results might not be immediate, they are absolutely critical. Since the very first days of this administration, we have also focused substantial time and attention on the terrorism threat emanating from Yemen and on developing the appropriate responses to that threat. We are helping to train and develop Yemeni counterterrorism forces, and those efforts will continue. The resolve of Yemeni security forces has grown over the past year as Al-Qaeda began specifically targeting Yemeni security officials, and many brave Yemenis have given their lives in defense of their country and their fellow citizens. We will continue to work with Yemeni forces with the intention of building their capacity, which will allow us over time to ramp down security aid and assistance as their forces develop greater proficiency. We are helping Yemen build its counterterrorism capacity for a very specific purpose, so that Yemen, with our assistance, can go on the offensive against Al-Qaeda. Going on the offensive against Al-Qaeda means exactly that, using all the tools available to identify, locate, capture, and when necessary, kill those who are dedicated to murdering innocent men, women, and children. And in my many discussions with President Saleh, whether in person or on the phone, I have conveyed President Obama's personal commitment that the United States will do whatever it can to help the people of Yemen rid their country of the terrible cancer of Al-Qaeda. In addition to near-term capacity building efforts, we are currently engaged with Yemeni officials to build a reintegration and vocational training program to complement their increasingly aggressive counterterrorism arrest campaign against al-Qaeda. The Yemenis agree on the need to better facilitate the integration of former Yemeni terrorists back into society through a combination of jobs training, post-release monitoring, psychological evaluations, as well as religious instruction. We are currently working with our international partners through the Friends of Yemen construct and other bilateral discussions to determine the best way to leverage each other's strengths to address the need for this type of long-term program in Yemen. Achieving our shared goal of disrupting and dismantling the al-Qaeda network in Yemen will require patience. We will need to draw on not just our cooperation with Yemen and other partner nations against al-Qaeda, but also refine and develop intelligence relationships, security screening processes, and Yemeni counterterrorism forces to address effectively the threat posed by al-Qaeda. The attempted attacks from al-Qaeda operatives in Yemen over the past year also underscore the importance of a multi-layered defense of our homeland and the need to constantly strengthen each layer. In the wake of the attempted attack last Christmas, we implemented new screening measures and intelligence reforms. Over the past year, the Department of Homeland Security has worked with the International Civil Aviation Organization to reach historic agreements on improving international aviation security, including new standards for screening air cargo. And concurrently, we deployed Transportation Security Administration experts to Yemen to train over 300 Yemeni aviation personnel on security screening procedures and deploy screening equipment to address the gaps in this process in Yemen. The department is also working closely with the Yemeni government to determine a way forward that includes improved security measures that will allow for lifting of the air cargo ban now in place against items coming from Yemen. The attempt by terrorists to ship improvised explosive devices as air cargo also demonstrates the crucial role that intelligence relationships with our partners play in disrupting terrorist attacks. In this case, the Saudis provided the actionable information that enabled our British and Emirati friends and industry partners to intercept the package and disable the devices. I also want to note that we achieve our counterterrorism objectives not only by disrupting terrorist operations and protecting the homeland, but also by depriving terrorist recruiters of the symbols they have used to help radicalize and indoctrinate their foot soldiers. As President Obama has said, one such symbol is the U.S. detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. Secretary Gates, Admiral Mullen, and General Petraeus have each spoken publicly about the lasting effect of Guantanamo as a recruiting symbol for terrorists, and that includes al-Qaeda in Yemen. And that is why the United States continues to work to build Yemen capacity as a vital partner in the administration's ongoing efforts to close Guantanamo. A significant proportion of the detainees still incarcerated in Guantanamo are Yemeni nationals. As the president has said, we will not release or transfer detainees we consider a continuing threat under any circumstances. So we are working diligently with the government of Yemen to build their capacity to properly monitor, prosecute, and incarcerate individuals as required to protect both our nations. Let me take a moment at this point to say a few words about the candor of the discourse that is taking place between the Yemeni and American governments. As with all bilateral relationships, the relationship between Washington and Sana'a is, at times, marked by differences of view, tension, and even strong frustration by each side. We, the United States, frequently push the Yemenis to move further and faster along the path of economic and political reform, to reach a peaceful accommodation with the Houthis and southern oppositionists, and to be more aggressive in the actions they take against al-Qaeda. For their part, the Yemenis complain to us that our security and development assistance flows are too slow and encumbered by bureaucratic requirements and complications, that we expect economic and political reforms virtually overnight without understanding the implications of such reforms on Yemeni society and stability, and that we are more interested in fighting al-Qaeda than helping the Yemeni people. I consider this to be a healthy tension, and President Saleh and I have had what I will call many animated conversations as we have debated and argued over major substantive issues. But that is the hallmark of true friendship, not telling the other what they want to hear, but telling the other what they need to hear. And that is why I called President Saleh the day before the WikiLeaks releases hit the press. I explained to President Saleh that we deeply regretted the public release of purported diplomatic correspondence that resulted from despicable criminal activity. I told President Saleh that it was most unfortunate that these releases would be taking place and that I hoped that they would not cause problems for him, the Yemeni government, or the Yemeni people. I told President Saleh that President Obama appreciated his understanding of an unfortunate and regrettable development, and that the United States is now even more determined to pursue even stronger ties to Yemen in the future. So this is the comprehensive strategy we're pursuing with our Yemeni partners, not simply to destroy the terrorists who defile the Yemeni ground they walk on, but to help Yemen address the political, economic, and social forces that contribute to violence and terrorism and deprive the people of Yemen of a future of security and prosperity. Our approach toward Yemen is emblematic of our overall approach to counterterrorism. As I've said previously, our CT strategy must be nested within and consistent with our broader foreign policy and national security strategy. That is true whether we are talking about Afghanistan and the Fatah, Somalia and the Horn of Africa, the Sahel region of Africa, or the Arabian Peninsula. In Yemen, as in those other critically important regions, we are drawing on all our resources and capabilities to counter and disrupt the immediate threat and to protect the American people from attack. At the same time, however, we are also working to create lasting security, stability, and prosperity in Yemen so that Al-Qaeda and other extremists cannot find safe haven there. If we fail to do our part to address the underlying economic, political, and security challenges in countries such as Yemen, we will find ourselves fighting against the Al-Qaeda threat for years and years to come. A counterterrorism strategy that focuses on the immediate threat to the exclusion of the more comprehensive political, economic, and development-oriented approach is not only short-sighted, but also doomed to fail. In closing, I would simply reiterate that our counterterrorism efforts in Yemen are part of our larger comprehensive approach to protecting the American people. Yesterday, the President provided the American people with an update with regard to our efforts in Afghanistan and Pakistan. As the President said, our core goal remains the same: to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat Al-Qaeda and prevent its capacity to threaten the American people and our allies in the future. We're making significant progress toward that goal. In the tribal region between Afghanistan and Pakistan, the core of Al-Qaeda is under more pressure than at any point since it fled Afghanistan 9 years ago. Senior leaders have been killed. It's harder for them to recruit, to travel, to train, to plot, and to launch attacks. In short, Al-Qaeda is hunkered down. As the President said, it will take time to ultimately defeat Al-Qaeda, and it remains a ruthless and resilient enemy bent on attacking our country. But we are going to remain relentless in disrupting and dismantling that terrorist organization, and I can envision the demise of Al-Qaeda's senior leadership and cadre in the coming years. And around the world, wherever Al-Qaeda and its terrorist affiliates try to take root, we are going to continue using every tool at our disposal to protect the American people and build the capacity of our partners to protect their people. And that includes staying true to the ideals and values that make us Americans and make our nation great. Because as the President said, whereas terrorists offer nothing but a vision of death and destruction, the United States is going to continue to offer people around the world a vision of hope, progress, and justice. Thank you very much.
Thank you for a notably clear and forceful and comprehensive policy statement from which I think all of us learned. Mr. Brennan is going to take us some questions. Let me ask you to be brief and to identify yourself just as a courtesy to him. We'll start with the gentleman right here. Wait for the mic if you would.
Thank you very much. Mark Cass from the Middle East Policy Council. Mr. Brennan, I'd like to applaud you very much on your statement of a strategy that goes beyond simply counterterrorism, but also talks about development. My question is it enough? The figures you mentioned are really pretty small compared to the kinds of things we're spending elsewhere. I could envision even spending 10 times as much as the figures you mentioned would make this task challenging. If it's worth doing, do we need to devote more resources to Yemen? Thank you.
Absolutely. I agree that there are quite a number of challenges in Yemen that require a tremendous amount of resources. That is one of the reasons why we put together this Friends of Yemen construct, so that we can be working in concert with our partners overseas, whether it be the Gulf Arab states, Europeans, and others, to ensure that we have a comprehensive program that goes beyond bilateral relations between individual countries in Yemen. But there's also a question about the absorptive capacity of Yemen, and making sure that our investment in Yemen is going to be something that is going to address some of those longstanding and structural problems in the country. Obviously, Yemen gets a lot of budgetary relief and subventions, support from other countries so that they can continue to make payroll and other types of things. And we're not talking about trying to move all of that bilateral assistance into the Friends of Yemen construct. However, I think what we want to do is to make sure we identify those infrastructure projects, those types of economic and development projects that are going to be a part of the future of Yemen, so that the investment is done wisely, not just as a temporary palliative that's going to address requirements or requests. And I think for too long it has been more tactical than strategic, more short-term than long-term. But this is going to take some time, and that's what we've tried to explain to not just our Yemeni partners, but other countries as well, a longer-term approach.
John, with your permission, I'll take three at a time.
That'd be fine.
Okay. Well, let's take this little group of three, and then I'll move to the back.
Good morning, John. This is Bob Dreyfus from Nation and Rolling Stone. I remember a conversation we had a number of years ago where you explicitly said that the military is the wrong instrument to fight terrorism with. And among the incentives for recruiting terrorism, many people argue that the drone attacks and the night raids by forces in southern Afghanistan and so forth are actually, like Guantanamo, recruiting posters for Al-Qaeda. Can you address that point, and are we, as Rumsfeld once asked, creating more terrorists than we're killing? And I wanted to ask, sort of in a parallel sense, you said Al-Qaeda is hunkered down. Can you say something about the relationship between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban? Because many people think that we could make a deal with the Taliban if they would renounce Al-Qaeda under certain circumstances.
Oh, to Aberdeen. John, to achieve the comprehensive plan that you have outlined, don't you think we need a special envoy like the late Richard Holbrooke for Yemen, number one? Two, have we talked to our GCC friends about allowing Yemenis to work in the GCC countries? I mean,
and right behind you, please.
Mehreen Farooq from the World Organization for Resource Development and Education. I wanted to thank you for a really informative presentation. My question was that this comprehensive strategy sounds very similar to what we already have in place in several places like Pakistan, for example. You know, where on one front we're supporting Pakistan military's counterinsurgency efforts while at the same time providing them humanitarian and development assistance. However, despite our best efforts, Pakistan's situation has drastically worsened over the past 9 years. So are there lessons that we can apply from there to Yemen?
That's three, right? Well, it's more than three, but it was three people.
I think we should limit it to one right. Per...
Bob, I don't think I ever said that the military is the wrong instrument. I said it would be inappropriate to think of the military as the only instrument. And that's what we're trying to do, is to make sure that it's balanced against all those other types of capabilities that the U.S. government has, kinetic, non-kinetic, intelligence, diplomatic, development, or whatever. You know, are we creating more terrorists than we're removing from the battlefield? I mean, that is sort of the key question. We have made significant progress in the Fatah in partnership with our Pakistani partners. And so we really feel as though Al-Qaeda core has taken it on the chin and that they are, you know, focusing more on trying to ensure their own security than carrying out attacks. That doesn't mean that they're not still lethal, that they still have a capability we have to be very careful about. But I do think that we have been able to make progress, and I do think it is this combination of addressing the near-term threats and identifying those terrorist operatives who are planning to carry out attacks and find them, and as I said, if we can capture them, or if need be, to remove them from the battlefield, we will do that. But it has to be balanced against this longer-term effort that we're working with our partners. As far as Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, you know, they have had a long history. I think the next chapter of the relationship between them is to be played out as we see the next phases of the situation in Afghanistan. I think the Taliban and others know clearly what our position is, that we will not tolerate whatsoever any relationship of any entity or organization or country with Al-Qaeda. But we continue to prosecute our effort in Afghanistan. And as the report yesterday said, I believe we have arrested the momentum of the Taliban. As far as the comprehensive plan on Yemen, a special envoy, I think some people in the U.S. government believe I'm the special envoy since I go out there so often. But also what President Obama wanted to do early on was to signal to Yemen and to President Saleh, as well as to other governments, that the White House has a vested interest in Yemen's future, that it is critically important that we move now to arrest some of these trends in Yemen, to include the growth of Al-Qaeda and the deterioration of some of those economic features of the country. So I deal a lot, not just with our Yemeni partners, but also with other countries about Yemen. So, you know, at some point, does there need to be a special envoy? Steve Sesh did a great job while he's out there. Ambassador Feierstein is out there now. They are sort of the front and center envoys that are, you know, every day pushing forward sort of our foreign policy objectives. Comprehensive strategy that we have in place in places like Pakistan, yes, we have learned a lot from that. In many respects, you know, what we're trying to do in countries like Pakistan and Yemen and in other countries where there is a serious terrorist problem and problem of militancy, we're trying to ensure that our counterterrorism strategy is nested within this broader and more comprehensive framework. But in all of these cases, I think time really is required in order to change situations that have been the product of many years in the making. So we're trying to absorb those lessons and now apply them as we move forward.
Okay, let's go to the back. Okay, go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm Carolyn Pursuti with Voice of America TV. A question for you about WikiLeaks. Some analysts are saying because of the two cables that were released, both on the whiskey and also on the airstrikes, that this will just strengthen Al-Qaeda's recruitment efforts in Yemen. Do you have any proof of that, and how is the administration following that?
Okay, who else? There's another lady right now. Okay, good.
Thank you. Mina Al-Arabiya, Sharq Al-Awsat newspaper. I wanted just to clarify some of the points you made about Guantanamo Bay. Are you seeing that the possibility would be to strengthen Yemen's capabilities to try those that are being held in Guantanamo of Yemeni origin? If you could clarify a bit on that. Thank you.
And a gentleman right here.
Thanks. Tom Malinowski with Human Rights Watch. Two quick questions. First, can you say with confidence today that no U.S. assistance is being diverted by Yemen for the fight against the Houthis or the Southern Secessionists? And second, on Guantanamo, what would you say, setting the politics aside, setting the congressional restrictions aside, what would you say from a strictly counterterrorism point of view hurts us more right now? What would hurt us more? An effort to begin repatriating Yemeni detainees with some sort of rehabilitation program with the knowledge that it wouldn't be perfect and that a handful of people probably would be seen going back to the fight, or maintaining Guantanamo indefinitely as a camp for mostly Yemeni detainees, and retaining it as the symbol that you and the president have said
it is. Tom.
First question regarding WikiLeaks. I'm not going to address any specifics that might have been in the press about the contents of purported cables. Al-Qaeda and other terrorists will use whatever they can to try to recruit individuals and additional adherents to their twisted ideology. So they might point to certain developments, to certain things that come out in the public and the press, As I said, they're going to seize upon whatever they can. They are, as I said, a bunch of murderous thugs. They are individuals that are just determined to destroy and kill. And I think more and more individuals in Yemen, as well as other parts of the world, are seeing that Al-Qaeda's supposed sort of religious banner is a facade for this murderous agenda. On Guantanamo, in terms of trying individuals, I did include the potential for prosecution because as we've repatriated detainees to various countries, those countries may also have reason to prosecute individuals for whatever types of violations of their laws they might want to consider. That has happened in a number of cases. We're not saying that they need to be tried, and during this administration, we repatriated eight Guantanamo detainees to Yemen since this administration has come in. There were many more that were released in the previous administration. But this is something that we're continuing to look at and to work on, which is related to the question, the last question about, first of all, the issue related to U.S. assistance is going to the Houthis, the Southern Secessionists. We have put in place, I think, some mechanisms that we have made part of our program insistence that this not be used or diverted. This is something that Ambassador Sesh worked on very, very diligently with the Yemenis to ensure that our support was going to be used for counterterrorism, for our security assistance to them, for its legitimate purpose, whether that be for counterterrorism, maybe sometimes for anti-piracy, for maritime security, and that it would not be used for use against domestic oppositionists. On the issue of, what's the balance or the tipping point in terms of sending people back to Yemen or keeping Guantanamo open indefinitely? Clearly, there has been a determined effort by this administration to reduce the population of Guantanamo. There are some folks in the Congress who have their own views about what should and shouldn't happen with that Guantanamo population that we're having to grapple with and deal with. We're looking at all the individual cases. The president said we're not going to release people that might pose a security threat. This is why we have a dialogue, and we've had a dialogue just this week with the Yemenis about what measures can be put in place that will ensure that there will be the successful repatriation of these individuals. And to date, the individuals that have been repatriated to Yemen during this administration, thankfully, there's no indication that they've been they've returned in any way to terrorist or extremist activities.
Is the gentleman here?
Larry Shaughnessy from CNN. Mr. Brennan, you mentioned a couple times the Christmas bombing attempt last year, and then there earlier this Christmas season there was the attempted bombing of the Portland Christmas tree lighting ceremony. Can you give us any specifics about your concerns about a possible terrorist attack or attempted terrorist attack during this Christmas season?
Okay, there were a couple of other hands right here. All right, back. Go ahead.
Lieutenant Commander Joe Rizika, Senator McCain's Defense Legislative Fellow. Where do you see the Navy and Fifth Fleet's role in this in an already strained and stressful region?
And there was a gentleman right here, right?
Hi, Ken Delanian from the LA Times. I'm wondering if you think the Yemeni government knows where Anwar al-Awlaki is and could capture him if it so chose.
Okay, related to concerns about possible Christmas threats, I remember very well when I was starting to make dinner last Christmas when I got a call from White House Situation Room that there was somebody on a plane that was landing in Detroit with a bit of an issue. One of the things that we always do within the counterterrorism intelligence community is be particularly vigilant during the holiday season because of the increased travel that is taking place both within countries as well as transnationally. And you know, I think what we feel that we need to do in light of concerns about possible threats in Europe and other places, we always have to stay on our guard. And that's one of the things about the counterterrorism community is 24/7. The holiday season is a continuation of that 24/7 attention. If anything, we step it up during that time because of the heightened volume of travel. But at this point, I'm feeling good that we have the appropriate resources in place. But as I said before, Al-Qaeda is determined to carry out attacks. And also, you pointed out the Portland attempt. That was not something that was associated with Al-Qaeda per se. May have been inspired by it. But we're also looking at those smaller scale, sort of low-level types of terrorist attacks that are sometimes more difficult to detect than some of those more strategic ones. In terms of the Navy and the Fifth Fleet's role, I mean, clearly, the terrorist challenge presents many different sort of requirements. And so when I said we're using all instruments of American power, and as I mentioned to Bob before, the military presents one of the most important and powerful arrows in the quiver. What is being done in Afghanistan is in pursuit of ensuring that that part of the world is not going to be used by terrorists. So the Fifth Fleet in the Gulf region and in other areas where the U.S. military is present, it is something that we continue to take into consideration as we think about how we're going to help our partner countries do the capacity building and, as necessary, leverage those capabilities at a time when we believe it is necessary. On the issue of Anwar al-Awlaki, one of the things about Yemen and people who have been there, and most of this room I think has, and the last time I was there, I was up on in the flight deck of the plane that was going in for sort of a 45 minutes or so before we landed in Sana'a. And the topography of the country is really, really breathtaking. And one of the things that really strikes one is that just how desolate a number of the areas are of Yemen. And I think people know that the central government in Yemen, has had sort of tenuous control or oversight over many parts of the country, and that the tribes that are out there really are the ones that sort of rule those areas. The location of any one individual at any one time may be known by others. What we're trying to do is to make sure that the individuals that we are interested in finding and detaining, that we are working very closely with our Yemeni partners as well as with others who might have knowledge about that. So I'm hoping that if people know where certain individuals are, they're going to come forward and assist the Yemeni government in tracking down these individuals that are trying to kill innocent people.
This gentleman right here. And we'll go to here. Go here. Yes. This has got to be the last round, so make them good.
Joseph Emmer from Freedom House. You mentioned that when you're in your private conversations with President Saleh, that's often you do push on reforms, specifically political reform. and they often complain that they can't expect those kind of things over. We can't expect those kind of things overnight. How would you characterize the pace right now of political reform in Yemen? And what can you point to specifically that they can do on political reform, civil liberties, and what should they be doing right now?
Thanks. Right here.
Hi, Mike Levine with Fox News. Two quick questions. First, you had mentioned with regards to WikiLeaks, you had referenced, quote, despicable criminal activity. I was wondering if you would include Julian Assange in that. Also, in terms of AQAP, you talked about next generations of people in Yemen. How do you think groups like AQAP might start using the internet and cyber attacks and things like that to further their cause?
Thank you. And gentlemen right here.
Thank you. Munir Mawari, independent journalist and originally from Yemen. 2 days ago, a Yemeni journalist in Sana'a, who is the correspondent of the Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, the Pan-Arab Daily, met with Al-Quds, one of the USS Cole bomber. He interviewed him, took photos in the tribal area in Shabwa province. Do you think this journalist can meet with Al-Quds and the Yemeni government cannot find him? And if Al-Qaeda, bring in President Saleh $300 million a year, why should he go after them? This is a common sense that we, as a Yemeni American, ask myself. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, as far as you know, what is happening on political reform and on the civil liberties front, I think you know, the political reform takes many different dimensions and steps. The fact that the Yemeni government engaged directly with the Houthis, has engaged directly with some of the southern oppositionists, I think is a good step, but it needs to be followed up. There needs to be a lot more that done along those lines. It is something that we continue to emphasize in our discussions with them on a regular basis. I know the embassy does that. The political system in Yemen is one that has evolved over the years. One of the things that, as I said, our staff had met with some of the individuals involved in sort of anti-corruption and rule of law and governance, and there needs to be continued engagement with that. But that's where I think our assistance is going to be particularly important. But the political reform front, I think, has to go hand in hand with some of the economic reform as well. And what we want to do is to make sure that we're able to push it as quickly as far as we can, but also recognizing that there is a fragility within the Yemeni system. And so we want to make sure that we're able to do things without destabilizing the country. But that should not also be an excuse for Yemen not to move forward on the political and economic reform front. And I think in the past it has. As far as my reference to despicable criminal activity, any classified information that finds its way out of the appropriate channels is something that is done in an unauthorized way and that violates U.S. law. And individuals who are responsible for that are subject to prosecution, criminal charges. The WikiLeaks investigation is ongoing, and I'm not going to comment on any individual's potential sort of culpability or involvement in that. But I just want to say that in the first instance, the unauthorized disclosure of classified information is a criminal violation. As far as AQAP and cyber activity and cyber attacks, you know, a number of the terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda and AQAP, have shown a deftness and skill in using the internet for various propaganda purposes, other purposes. And it's one of the things that we're being vigilant about how they are using it and how they might use different mechanisms to not just communicate or to propagandize, but also to create problems and cause harm. So it's something that we are watching carefully. As far as the question of the reported interview, yes, I saw the reports about this interview that was conducted with Al-Quds. I don't have any additional information on it. There clearly are individuals within Yemen who are able to have access to terrorists and to Al-Qaeda types. They find their way to them. And I would just hope that more and more Yemenis of whatever stripe are going to see the Al-Qaeda types in the country as inimical to Yemeni interests, and that they should not be facilitating Al-Qaeda's ability to get its message out and to recruit and to market itself. I do think that the Yemeni government is looking to the Yemeni people to provide them the support, to provide them the assistance, to provide them the information about where these terrorists are hiding. And that's what they're doing. They're hiding within the population so that they protect themselves. And I always find it disturbing that these individuals who have this profile send others to their death. They don't send themselves to their death. They send others, these poor, young, unfortunate individuals who are given suicide packs or other things, while these individuals, you know, the ilk of al-Awlaki, hide in caves and in places of Yemen because they're trying to protect themselves and put others at harm. It's just a matter of time before we and the Yemenis are able to find them, uproot them, and to bring them to justice. And certainly I am determined to do that. And I have found a resolve in Yemen. And that's why I continue to go back there, talking with President Saleh. But as I said, a number of Yemenis have given their lives to try to protect their fellow citizens. And I think more and more Yemenis are going to rally to the cause against al-Qaeda and see it for the cancer it is. Thank you.
I think I want to apologize to the many people I couldn't call on. Judging from the number of hands, we could spend the better part of the afternoon together. I think it's a testament to Mr. Brennan's talk and to his answer to the questions, the amount of questions out there. You've been incredibly candid and knowledgeable, frank and generous with your knowledge. And for that, I hope all of you will join me in thanking you very much for your great service.